Musical arts and performance and presentation.
Twelve 37 now on the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Tom Rogers. Well, we have gotten no shortage of heavy weather in the eastern half of the country in the last 24 hours. We've gotten a bunch of rain. That's been happening off and on for the last couple of weeks. And, of course, the tornadoes that roared through Alabama and other southern states yesterday, killing upwards of 200 people. Right now, the most prominent activity is some severe weather that's been taking place in the New York City area. And further down the coast, southeastern Georgia and eastern North Carolina, seeing some thunderstorm activity now. We're seeing only a few showers, but we're going to see more showers and maybe a thunderstorm move into the area later today as a deep upper-level low-pressure system over southern Wisconsin this morning is tracking to the southeast over the lower Great Lakes through this afternoon. Some scattered showers and thunderstorms will develop today as the system moves nearby. Brief heavy downpours, small hail, and gusty winds could accompany the stronger storms. In addition, away from any storms, the westerly winds will increase and gust up to 35 miles an hour at times today. By tonight, that storm system will shift east of the area as a high-pressure ridge begins to build into the Midwest, and that will finally bring some dry and mild weather to the area for Friday and into the start of the weekend. But don't get used to it, because by Saturday night and Sunday, we'll have another round of showers and thunderstorms moving into east-central Illinois. For the rest of the afternoon, cloudy and windy, scattered showers and isolated thunderstorms developing this afternoon, so any sunshine we're seeing today is going to move out the high 58 degrees this afternoon. And our winds will be out of the west at 15 to 20 miles an hour, at times gusting to around 35. Mostly cloudy tonight, the low of around 38 as the rain comes to an end. Northwest winds at 10 to 15. For tomorrow, mostly sunny. Friday's high 65 degrees, winds out of the west at 5 to 10. So the winds will be dying down at that point. Partly cloudy Friday night, the low of around 47. And for Saturday, breezy again, but still mostly sunny with a high reaching 75, probably the best day in a few days. Tomorrow or Saturday night, though, showers and thunderstorms redevelop, the low of around 52. Showers and thunderstorms are likely for Saturday night and into Sunday. Sunday's high only 57. Beyond that, it'll turn colder with a chance of lingering showers on Sunday night, then a little longer dry period, partly to mostly clear Monday through Wednesday, with Monday's high around 60, up to the mid-60s on Tuesday and into Wednesday, lows Sunday night in the lower 40s, and then rather chilly around 40 Monday and Tuesday night in areas further north. They're talking about the possibility of some scattered frost. Across the region right now, temperatures are kind of very widely varying. We have 58 for a temperature right now in Mattoon, but up to the north and west, temperatures are still in the mid-40s, 46 in Pontiac. Peoria has 47. It's 55 degrees, though, in Decatur. Bloomington has clouds and 49 degrees. In Mattoon, as mentioned, 58 with some sunshine, cloudy and 55 in Paris. Rantoul has only 52, and at the top of the hour at Willard Airport, it was 53 degrees. A little bit drier than the past few days, with a relative humidity at 68%. The dew point is 43. Rather gusty winds out of the west at 25 to at times 32 miles an hour. The barometer is steady at 29.78. And on our Friends Plaza thermometer right now, with variably cloudy skies, a temperature of 54 degrees. It's 19 minutes before 1 o'clock. It's the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Tom Rogers in for Celeste Quinn. In Japan, some businesses are pledging to rebuild in the areas that were hardest hit by the earthquake and tsunami from back in March. The question is how. Infrastructure is gone, local governments are devastated, and workers there are homeless. NPR's Yuki Noguchi found one business trying to overcome the odds, a maker of soy sauce.
We go looking for what used to be the 204-year-old headquarters of Yagisawa Company in what was the city of Rikuzen Takata. Its ninth-generation CEO tries first to locate his parents' house, which stood across the street. With so little of it left, Michihiro Kono gets confused. The factory and store itself were made of centuries-old lacquered clay shingles and wood. A dirt path runs where the entrance once was.
At first it was like, oh, a tsunami. Oh, it's coming. Oh man, it's huge. Oh, the company. There goes the company.
And just like that, the ocean claimed more than $6.5 million worth of plant, property, and equipment. People scrambled up a nearby hill carrying older people on their backs. Two of the 41 employees didn't make it. Yagisawa Company is still functioning. Employees cram into a one-room trailer behind the city's driving school. Kono scrapes some cultures necessary to recreate his family's ancient soy sauce recipe from the inside of a broken machine. Little else of value remains. Insurance will cover less than 5% of the loss. A lawyer told him to file for bankruptcy. Still, Kono is determined to help rebuild. He says without jobs, people will leave, lose hope.
If you've lost family, the house where you lived, and you have no hope of working with your colleagues again, then what? I don't want this to become the city where, 6 months later, survivors are committing suicide.
At the driving school, local businessmen meet to discuss recovery plans. They, like Kono, are hoping to restart by asking the government for low-interest loans and other support. They track other business owners down at shelters, hoping to get them on board. But Kono admits, in a city where everyone's lost someone, many aren't ready to hear it. Truth be told, even some of Kono's own employees don't know what to make of him. Fumie Abe says Kono showed up at her house shortly after the tsunami and asked her to report back to work.
My honest feeling was, what are you thinking? I mean, at that point, we worried about food. Privately, I was still looking for loved ones, and I still had to deal with that.
On the side of the road, about a half mile from the old headquarters, Kono discovered one of the wooden barrels used to make his soy sauce. The barrel is large enough to stand in. It still smells of good, savory soy sauce. On the back side of the barrel, pooled by my feet, is some dark brown liquid. Yep, Kono says, that's my soy sauce. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News, Rikuzen Takata, Japan.
If you went to your favorite online poker site last week, you may have found that it had been seized by the U.S. government. This week in Legal Issues in the News, Christine Hurd explains how federal prosecutors are doubling down on online gambling.
I am about to tell you something that may shock you. In the United States, many people gamble online. If you knew that already, then this may shock you. Online gambling is a federal crime. Historically, the regulation of gambling has been left to the states, and currently each state has a variety of gambling prohibitions and exceptions, including casinos, horse racing, video gambling terminals, bingo, and of course, lotteries. However, for the past decade or so, the federal government has taken an interest in the prohibition and prosecution of online gaming. In the early 2000s, the Department of Justice initiated several prosecutions of online gambling sites under the 1961 Wire Act, which makes it illegal to place bets over the wires. During this same period, the U.S. government pressured U.S. credit card companies and PayPal into voluntarily refusing payments to online gambling establishments. However, online gambling sites merely moved their servers out of the country, registered in other jurisdictions, and used NetTeller, a foreign company, to process payments. Beginning in 2006, the U.S. government raised the stakes, first arresting David Carruthers, the CEO of BetOnSports, a legal gambling site in the U.K., on racketeering and fraud charges while he was changing planes in the Dallas-Fort Worth airport. In 2007, prosecutors arrested two former officers of NetTeller who were also passing through U.S. jurisdiction. At the same time, Congress passed the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act of 2006 as a last-minute amendment to the Safe Ports Act. The UIGEA makes it a crime to accept wagers or bets online or to process those wagers or bets. The act exempts a number of activities, including lucrative state lotteries and fantasy sports. But then the online gambling industry seemed lulled into complacency. Online poker sites continued to do business, accepting wagers from U.S. residents through a series of online intermediaries designed to foil U.S. banks poised to block illegal gambling payments. Mainstream print media advertised these sites, and mainstream television stations aired poker tournaments with players sporting hats and shirts with online gambling logos. Then came Friday, April 15th. Federal prosecutors unsealed 11 indictments naming officers of the three largest foreign-based online gambling sites, PokerStars, Full Tilt Poker, and Absolute Poker. In addition, three U.S. individuals charged with fraudulently processing online payments were arrested. Moreover, the prosecutors got the gambling company's attention by seizing their domain names and freezing their U.S. assets. Defendants were charged not only with violating the UIGEA, but also with bank fraud and money laundering in their attempts to circumvent the act. The prosecution is definitely going all in and forcing the first trial run of the UIGEA. Many fans of online poker want defendants to argue that poker isn't gambling at all because it is a game of skill, not of chance. Interestingly, as the economy has turned, many in Congress have called for the legalization of online gambling, arguing that states could turn to online gaming to bring in much-needed tax revenue. Several states have proposed laws legalizing online gaming as well. Just as necessity is the mother of invention, economic necessity is often the mother of state-legalized gambling. This is Christine Hurt.
Christine Hurt is a professor of law at the University of Illinois. You can hear Legal Issues in the News every Monday morning on Morning Edition, and you can listen online anytime at will.illinois.edu.
Come sort through thousands of CDs, DVDs, tapes, and albums, plus stereo equipment for the 2011 vintage vinyl this Saturday at our new site, the former Altman's Billiards and Barstool Supply, 301 West Market View Drive, Champaign. Proceeds benefit the Illinois Radio Reader. For sale hours, visit will.illinois.edu.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 28th of April, 2011. It's the birthday of Eugene Shoemaker, born in Los Angeles, 1928, graduated from California Institute of Technology at the age of 19, studying geology. His study of the Earth sparked an interest in the moon, and he became particularly